My guest on this episode of Off Course Agility is Lori Reynolds from Colorado. She reached out to me via a unique method through the Anchor app and left me a voicemail. So I'll play the voicemail that she left, where she introduces herself, and then she'll join me on the podcast.
Hi, Ed. This is Lori Reynolds. I've been listening to your podcast, especially this last one with my friend Craig Coonrad, and they sound fun. If you're ever in need of another guest, I'd be happy to come on and speak with you. I've been doing NADAC agility since 2003 and been to championships a lot of times. I'm out in Colorado, so I don't normally come to the ones that are on the East Coast or on the East side of the world. But I'd be happy to talk to you if you ever need additional guests. Thanks.
My guest today on Off Course Agility is Lori Reynolds from the state of Colorado. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ed. Thank you for having me.
And could you tell me, I've been to Colorado at least once in my life. I think I visited the Coors Brewery in Golden, Colorado. So I don't have an extensive knowledge of the state, but could you tell me whereabouts you are in Colorado?
Yeah, I am east of Colorado Springs. So Colorado Springs is kind of the second big area on the Front Range. And I live about 20 minutes east of Colorado Springs out on the plains. I have a beautiful view of Pikes Peak, and it's very windy out here.
Okay. Yeah. And now, is that Colorado in relation to Denver? Where is that?
It would be south of Denver.
South of Denver. Okay. Yeah, I'm not sure if I made it down to Colorado Springs or not. I remember when I was out there, I was in Denver, and I went up through Golden, and I went to Estes National Park. So that was generally where I was in Colorado the one time I know I was there. And it was very beautiful, I might add. All right. So as usual, I'm going to ask you, how did you discover agility? How did you get started in agility?
Oh, that's what I like to call the story of Max. So in May of 2002, I had a 9-month-old dog walk up my driveway. And we looked for a couple of weeks to try to find owners for him. And living out in the country, we frequently get dogs dumped out here. So we decided he was a dumped dog, and I decided to keep him. So I took him to a family obedience class out in a local training school, and he aced everything. This was a super smart dog. At the end of the class, the owner stopped by, and she was watching the little last test that we had to do, and she said, "You need to come to my agility class." And at that point, I had never even heard of agility, and I said, "Well, what's that?" And she gave me a little bit of an overview and said, "You need to come. I have a class starting next week. Come see what it's like." So I think we started in August 2002 in our agility classes. May 2003 was our first trial in what the locals are calling the snow bowl. There were 4 inches of snow on the ground. I would never run in that these days, but I didn't know any better then. He did really, really well in that trial. 2004, we had our first time at NADAC Championships in pre-elite.
Wow, that's cool. That was very quick, too, I might say.
He was brilliant. He's pretty well known in Colorado because he was my demo dog and my student dog. He ran with well over 100 people in his career. So he ran trials and seminars with everybody from kids to 70-year-old women. He loved the game. He was born for agility.
Right. And what kind of breed was Max?
Well, of course he was a walk up your driveway, so we don't really know, but we think he was Corgi and cattle dog. Plus.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay, so you started with Max around 2002, then it sounds like. And you mentioned that you went to NADAC. So why don't I ask you about other dogs since I assume Max has passed away now.
Yeah, Max lived 2 weeks shy of 17, and I lost him in 2018. So,
yeah, but that's a good long life for any dog breed.
It's an extremely long life, and he actually competed till he was almost 15 years old and had no issues.
Wow, really? That's great. That's great. Glad you were able to do that with him for so long. So, what other dogs do you have in your pack now, and maybe in the past too?
Well, so I'm on rescue number 11 right now. I won't go through all of those dogs. My current...
Okay. Yeah. That might be a bit much.
Yeah, that'll take the whole hour. My current pack, I have Pixie, who is my dog that I retired a little over a year ago. She's 11. She's a Border Collie Sheltie mix. She was my agility dog for the most part. She also does a lot of trick stuff. And then I have... two other mixes. I have a little 20-pound, we think maybe mini Aussie and Italian Greyhound mix named Zephyr, and he's 5. And then I have a herding sighthound mix who looks like a Kelpie-colored whippet named Onyx, and she is 3.5. And those two are more tricks dogs than they are agility dogs so far. I haven't had Onyx for very long, only about a year and a half. So we haven't actually done too much agility yet, but they both have their trick titles and they're very good at tricks.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'll hold that because I know you mentioned to me that you're a tricks trainer and it sounds like tricks are a part of your dog repertoire. So we'll get into that a little bit. So what agility venues have you done over the years?
Well, with Max, I did NADAC, USDAA, and DACNA. And so I don't know if you even know about DACNA, but that was a big venue here in Colorado for quite a while. It was based out of Arizona. It started in, I think, 2006 or so, and it just they just shut it down a couple of years ago or maybe a year and a half ago. But we were very active in DACNA. Max was the first dog in Colorado to get his championship title. You know, he was successful in all those venues. He had, well, he's in the 20 Natch Club, and he had 10,000 lifetime points. And he had a PDCH and USDAA, and then he had, I think, 5 or 6 of the championship titles from DACNA. So we played in all of those. With Pixie, I did almost strictly NADAC and DACNA.
Okay, yeah. Now, you asked if I have definitely heard of DACNA. I think I vaguely may have remembered it starting. I think, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, I think DACNA standard for like Dogs on Course, was it North America or something like that? I'm not sure. Yeah. But I didn't realize... I don't think DACNA ever really was that big on the East Coast. So I don't remember like seeing trials, and I've always done NADAC, so I've never tended to look that much at other venues.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure, but I don't think that ever got super big on the East Coast.
They had one area of the East Coast, and I believe it's New York. Don't quote me on that, but they had one area of the big that was pretty big on the East Coast, and it must have been kind of a group of clubs that had a lot of trials because we had the Western Championships and the Eastern Championships every year, and we would set the exact same course and combine the results. But it was really big here in Colorado and Arizona. There were some trials in Utah, a few in Texas. So it was pretty big in this area.
Right. All right. And yeah, but you said they do not exist now.
No, they shut down about a year and a half ago, I think.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And obviously I didn't know
that. Yeah.
but like I said, I am definitely NADAC focused. So I don't always know what's happening in all the other venues and would maybe have seen.
Well,
that.
It was sad. It was sad for me because from 2007 through about 2017, I went to championships every year. Sometimes went to that championships and NADAC championships, but I went to DACNA championships every year and did all their scoring and announced all the ribbons. And
oh wow,
it was kind of a big deal in my life, but I was sad when it went away.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah. Yeah, everybody has, you know, the venues that they like to attend, and it sounds like you enjoyed that one. Yeah. So just out of curiosity, where were some of their trials out on the western side?
A lot in Arizona and Colorado, a few in Texas, some in Utah. That's mostly where they were.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So since we're talking about championships, I'll ask a little bit about your NADAC championships. I think you mentioned, let's see, what did I jot down? You went to, in 2004, you went with Max to, in pre-elite.
I did.
Where, do you remember what where that trial
that
was?
That trial, actually, I can look at my I can look at my ribbons if I need to, because that's my room to Max is in here. That trial was actually in Castle Rock, Colorado.
Oh, so it was not that far.
It was local. It was an hour away from my house, which was wonderful. So that one was in Castle Rock. We went with Max from 2004 through 2007, I think.
Okay. Was that just on the east when they were kind of on the west and central, or did you go to the east?
They were mostly west and central. There was one in St. Louis that we went to. We went to one in Gillette. Trying to think of where the other ones were. Yeah, most of them say Gillette, Wyoming, and then Missouri and Castle Rock.
Okay. So the Missouri, was that, where was the one? What, do you not remember what year the one in Missouri was?
Let's see. Give me 1 second and I can tell you.
You're going to look at your ribbons. Yeah. Because, I mean, my history with NADAC is from like 2005, but I wasn't always aware of where all
the St. Louis was in 2005.
So that was, oh, so when I first started. Yep. So I would actually call that one, from my point of view, that's kind of like central U.S.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, so that, because, you know how there's always, you know, every year it comes up on the NADAC forum and other places where people would like to try, you know, the championships to be in the future. And people always say it would be nice to have one in the center, which I would agree. Maybe once in a while, one in the center would be nice. But, you know, even when it's in the center, people who are in California or New York or Maryland, that's pretty far for either one of those things.
Yeah, it is.
So, that's the problem with, you know, having any type of championship event. Tending toward the east and tending toward the west, at least then it put, but even then, like, I don't know, Gillette, from someone who maybe in Southern California, I would imagine, is still pretty far a trip.
Well, Gillette is even 8 hours for me, so.
Right, 8 hours even from Colorado. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, because, you know, us East Coasters, I can jump in, and of course, in the coronavirus world, I probably wouldn't do this, but I could jump in my car and I could be in Pennsylvania in like 90 minutes. I could probably be in New York in like 60 minutes, half hour, depending on where in New York I want to go. If I want to go to the city, depending on the traffic, I probably can get there in 45 minutes, just literally into it. But you know, out west, if you're in the center of a state out west, you can drive hours just to cross your state border. So it's if you've never been out west, you don't realize how vast and expansive the United
yep,
States
lots
is.
Lots of space out here.
Which is nice, too. Definitely nice. All right. So was there any other champs? Do you have any, like, memorable things about champs? Do you want to brag any about how you did at any of it? Or how... if you had any memorable runs or fun or bad, good or
you know, the memorable stuff is fun, is always fun to think about. So Max and I went from 2000, whatever I said, four to 2007 ish. And then Pixie and I went 2016 and 2018. Pixie got third place both times in her middle class, middle sized class, and we were competing against Amanda Nelson in 2018. So third was a big deal, at least in my mind.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Hey, anytime when if you place in any of those classes, or do you even get on the ribbon board, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I'm competitive, but I'm not super competitive. So I'm competitive in the sense of I want to go and I want to do well, but I don't really care about doing well in relation to other people. I care more about doing well as far as working as a team with my dog, if that makes any sense at all.
Oh, it makes a lot of sense to me, because that's to me, agility is that team bond and just having that good run, even if you don't cue, because I remember I run beagles. I've always I don't have necessarily the dog that's necessarily the best, but when you get that connection and you run the course and it was a good run, you stayed connected through the whole thing. To me, that's where I get my high. And then if I get a cue and yep. You know, it's great.
So I'll tell you one of the funniest memories that I have. I mean, of course, there's a million funny memories at NADAC, and there are a million sweet and bittersweet, but one of the funniest memories I have is in the early years when they weren't quite so big as they are now, there used to actually be a banquet where they would hand out the Natch plaques, which were a thing back then. And so everybody from championships is sitting in a room having dinner, and they're announcing plaques and other awards. And all of a sudden the loudspeaker comes on and it says, excuse me, in the crating room, there's a loose dog, and it's a black and white border collie with a white tip on its tail. And 2/3 of the room got up. So that was kind of funny, because it just shows how similar all of our dogs are. Now, I was lucky. I had Max. He was brown and black and short, and you know, he didn't look like a border collie, so I didn't have to worry. But that was one of the funny things that I remember, was everybody getting up to go see if that black and white border collie with the white tip on its tail was theirs.
Right. Yes. But you ran the NADAC championships in the years where Sharon Nelson really was in charge of NADAC. And during some of those years, I know some of the courses were extremely long.
My first run, I think, was 43 obstacles.
Wow. Yeah. They, over the last few years, at least the ones that I've attended, it's like the length of the course is not.
Yeah, the length isn't the challenge anymore. Sharon had different ideas about what constituted a next level challenge. And so, yeah, for the first several years, you could expect 40 obstacles on course. And basically what it was is the arena got divided into two halves, and you ran a course on one side and ran through kind of a connecting section at the edge of the arena, and then ran a course on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty interesting and pretty challenging to both the handler and the dog. Just the extended.
Yeah, challenging, and boy, did it make things run really super late. I remember being there till.
Right. And that's, yeah, I think that's why things have changed more recently, just because who wants to be. When you get up and you go to the morning briefing at 7 a.m., do you really want to be that unlucky person that's making that final run at like 9:30?
Yeah, more like 11.
Yep. Yeah, that's even worse. Yeah, so I understand why it's changed. Just you got to keep it into a more tight time.
Chris and Amanda have done a great job.
All right.
I mean,
I agree. I think they're doing a great job. But of course, I never was at any of those champs where they were quite like that. So I've only seen the Chris Nelson, Amanda style champs, because I attended in 19 and 17, but I not as a handler, just as a as an observer. So, all right. So, you got anything else you got for Champs? Or
I mean, you know, Dr. Champs was fun. It was a little bit smaller and fewer people most of the time outside instead of inside, which sometimes presented a challenge. Both my dogs won first place several times in those championships, but it's really interesting to compare the two venues. The nice thing is that the people that attended both were pretty much the same people. And, you know, the NADAC community is awesome, which also meant that most of the DACMA community was awesome. But no, that's all. That's all I really have about championships.
Right. I'm going to ask this just because now I'm curious a bit, even though it doesn't apply, I guess, since DACMA doesn't. But in general, were the classes and courses similar? I mean, was the championship like a regular type course, NADAC?
Similar, sort of, yes, but DACMA had teeter still. They still had the shoot for the first few years. They had the tire jump. DACMA was... I mean, I kind of looked at DACMA as a mix between NADAC and something like UKC or USDAA.
Right. So there were some of the obstacles that NADAC had dropped out. They still had. Gotcha. All right. Very good. All right. Now, you've mentioned you do tricks with your dogs. And when you had emailed me before the show, you mentioned you train it and teach it and all that. So I'd like to ask a little bit about your tricks. How you do it? Are you a clicker person, or how do you train?
Yes, I'm a clicker person. I guess quick version of the story is in 2016 or so, I started getting interested in a trick organization called Do More With Your Dog. And their whole philosophy is make a trick program that's accessible for pretty much everyone. It's all positive based training. And so I got interested in that and started teaching my dogs tricks. And of course, every agility person teaches their dogs some tricks, right? It's just inherent in what we do. But I started getting a little bit more formal about it. And pretty quickly, I decided that I really liked the program and I wanted to be a little bit more involved. So I became a certified trick dog instructor, took their class, all the tests and interviews and stuff, and became an instructor. And I'm also now, they have a canine conditioning program. So I'm a canine conditioning, certified canine conditioning and fitness coach. And then they have a stunt dog program, which is basically a tricks program in front of an audience. And so I'm also a stunt dog judge. So I have Spark Teams on Facebook. They're free Facebook groups that show you how to teach all the tricks. And I help people with problems. And then we certify and you can actually earn titles. So in addition to the Natchez Pixie has, she also is a... trick dog champion.
Very nice. Okay. Yeah. I don't know much about tricks. I mean, I tend to think about tricks as it's quite simple. So could you just describe a trick or two to me?
Tricks can be as simple as sit at the novice level, right? Which is something we all teach. Spins. Those are novice type tricks, or they can be as complex as, what are a few of the more complex ones Pixie knows? Pixie can play basketball. So I throw the ball and she takes it and puts her paws up on a table and puts the ball through a little kid's basketball hoop. She can open a door, get a toy out of the cabinet, bring me the toy and close the door. Zephyr can climb an actual ladder. Yeah.
Wow.
A real ladder, which I can't leave ladders around or I'm in trouble. So yes. They can be They can be really easy. They can be really complex. I'm teaching Pixie right now to put a coin into a piggy bank slot, and she can do the little stacking cups, the little kids' cups that have the look like little measuring cups. She can stack one inside another. She does moonwalk, which is basically a bow and scoots all the way backwards for 5 or 6 feet. They do weave through your legs. So
Nice.
there's a huge variety.
Okay. You definitely got me. You got me visual of some of those tricks, and I'm pretty just thinking about it. I'm pretty impressed. But being an owner of a beagle, I don't want to teach my dog how to do anything that can open a door. If you can open the refrigerator door, I'm in bad trouble.
Well, you use a rope, so as long as you don't tie a rope to your refrigerator, you're good.
Right. That's right. But yeah, that would
So
not
yeah,
be one I would want
I started with that,
to
and I did the Facebook groups, and I have, I think, 1,200 people in my novice group now. I have groups for novice and all the levels, and for stunt dog and for canine conditioning, and then I kind of branched out into doing a few in-person seminars because I was already, since 2005, I've been teaching agility distance seminars in Colorado and the surrounding states. So I started doing some little trick seminars in addition to that. And then in December, just recently in December, I did a two free online trick training courses, and they had 100 people each in them. So we had a lot of fun.
Right, that's good. I know you had shared. Would you like to share your website? I can put it in
Oh,
the show
sure. Yeah,
notes too if you
it's
want.
just www.maximumfundogs.com.
Okay, yeah, and I did take a quick peek at that before at some point before we talked, and I did see. I know you have a note on there too, saying that you're not doing that much right now during COVID because it's actually you're saying you're kind of letting other people have the business because
Yeah,
you're employed
when this
separately.
whole COVID thing started, I was still teaching about 6 or 8 seminars, weekend seminars a year. And I had some online courses going. I've done some through the NADAC group, and I've done some on my own. And I have a full-time job, and I get paid very well. I don't rely on anything related to dogs for income. So when COVID started and people were unable to run their classes and had to start going to online or virtual, I just told all of my followers that because I don't rely on this for income, I didn't want to take discretionary income away from people who really needed it. And so everything, sorry about that. So everything of mine's been
That's no problem.
kind of on hold for a year. I did a couple of free trick classes, but and I did a couple of fundraising classes for NADAC online. But otherwise, I've just put my stuff on hold until this whole COVID thing goes away because I mean, that sounds kind of crass, but I don't need the money from teaching dog stuff. So I'd like the people who do to have that discretionary income.
Right. I think it's a very noble, generous thing to do. You do it more for the enjoyment and the satisfaction of teaching people than necessarily to
Absolutely.
earn an
Yeah.
income from it. So, yeah. And that I can totally get because I'm sure it must, especially like with tricks and things, you must get a thrill when the dogs and the people you're teaching are then able to successfully do the tricks that they taught their dog. They
Yeah, well,
taught
I
it
mean, I
by
love seeing the light
ear.
bulb come on. And for years and years, my big teaching thing has been distance because so many people struggled with like chances in NADAC, which we used to have gamblers, but now it's chances. And so the joy to me is watching people get it. One of my most heartwarming memories with Max was also a distance dog. Pixie is a bonus dog, not all the time, but a lot of the time. And one of my most heartwarming memories with Max is one of my seminar students was over 70. I don't know exactly how old she was, but she was having a really hard time because she couldn't run anymore. And I let her take Max on the course. And when she was done, she was in tears. She said, I can still do this if I can teach my dog to do distance. And that's why I do it. But it's stuff like that that is really my motivation for teaching.
Yeah, and I get that. That's really cool. So mentioning distance, so it does sound like you've been able to get decent distance with the dogs that you've done agility with, which I'm a bit, you know, my first dog, Dino, he was very Velcro to me. We didn't have much distance, a little bit. And my sister runs a beagle, Belle, and Belle is in the elite class in almost all classes, but in novice, the only thing she's still a novice in is chances, because the dog is, she follows her great. It's in some ways, having a dog that's stays very close to you is great, because you can easily correct problems. Like if something, you know, if you make a mistake in the handling or something, sometimes you can correct it real quick, and the dog is very eager to, you know, correct with you. But then for NADAC, for chances, and now Gamblers are back, and Gamblers has the gamble line, so there is a bit of a distance component in Gamblers. When your dog is very close in like that, it's very
hard. So I'll tell you what I tell all my students. Every single dog can learn distance. Not all of them can learn 70 feet of distance, but every single dog can learn to do some distance. It just takes an understanding of the communication. And you know, I call my main seminar, I call it Distance and Communication Foundations, because it's really about teaching the dog what you're trying to say more than it is about actually teaching the distance.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And I know what you're saying is true. It's just, I know for my sister, she has not been able to get that much distance from, from Belle. I know it's one of the things she'd like to strive for. And, unfortunately, you know, like COVID, going to a class for distance is, you know, it's just not that easy right now with the way the world is. And online classes, this is just me, online classes are only so good. It's something about the way I'm wired. Like if I don't have to physically go to the class and work the work, maybe it's a bit of laziness or whatever, but I just don't seem to get the same out of an online class as I do actual physical, you know, being there and working the dog class.
I think part of it is how it's structured too. I mean, if whoever's teaching the class kind of holds people accountable and says, I'm expecting to see, you know, video of your exercises, etc., there's a little more motivation to do it. But I agree. Some of the classes that I've signed up for, where it's just go through the lessons on your own, I have a hard time going and doing the exercises myself. Yes.
Right. Yeah, I get it. Yeah. No. And also, you know, from my point of view too, but this is my case, like I don't have the, I can't necessarily set the same stuff that you might do at a seminar. Like I don't have a big field, got very limited yard, and I do have a few obstacles, but you can only set like maybe two or three. That's it, you know. And then there may not even be a data distance, you know, 20 feet, because the yard's only maybe like, you know, 40 feet wide. I can't even do the NADAC short, small courses for VT. I have
5 acres, but I only have about 40 by 70 area that I train in, because the rest of it has too much cactus and yucca. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah. 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 That's the other thing. You can have a lot of land, but depending on what the land is,
right.
It may not do you much good because you really want that. The ideal thing is to have a nice 100 foot by 100 foot square of flat grass or sand or so whatever it is. But as long as you got 100 feet by 100 feet relatively level area, that's what.
Yep, that would be the ideal. Really, I'm on a hill, so no such luck for me.
Yeah, I totally understand. Same here. Don't have that. So, all right. So you're mentioning tricks, and now conditioning. That's really. Tell me what.
Well, canine conditioning is just a way to help us keep our dogs fit, whether they're pet dogs or athletic dogs or tricks dogs, which are often athletic. It's just a way to bring some of the fitness exercises to normal dog owners and help them understand the kinds of things they can do to keep their dogs fit. So, you know, we start off with easy stuff. Put your front paws on a fit pad, on a fit disc, you know, the little inflatable discs. We go all the way up to do a handstand on a slanted board or do a two on two off on a peanut that's stabilized, but of course, you know, the peanuts move, or balance on top of a balance ball. So it's just a way to help people understand how to do the exercises correctly to keep their dogs, either their pet dogs or their athlete dogs, to keep them fit and happy so that they have healthier lives. And you can earn titles doing it. So, you know, that's kind of the people motivation. Dogs don't care about titles. They care that their owners are spending time with them. But the motivation for people is you go through the different fitness levels and you can earn a title. Hey, I'm a canine conditioning level 1 title holder. I'm a canine conditioning level 2 title holder. And the exercises, of course, get progressively more difficult as you move up in level.
Great. Okay. Yeah. I didn't, I guess I didn't really know you could get.
You can. There's a program for that.
All right.
That one's through Do More With Your Dog, too. Yep.
Do More With Your Dog. Okay. Which you mentioned.
I recently I got invited to be on the advisory board for Do More With Your Dog. So I'm a lot more involved in the behind the scenes stuff for it. And, you know, it really is a program that is interested in the welfare of the dogs and cares about the people. And so I was kind of excited to get invited to do that.
Right. Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. And it sounds like that organization is involved in the things that you're interested in. And I'm sure that's why they asked you to be on the board. All right. So I'll just ask a question, you know, with the current coronavirus and the way the world's been, have you been able to been doing any trials?
I haven't. So I'm in one of the high-risk groups. Yeah. And so I am lucky enough to have a job that allows me to work from home full time. And I pretty much haven't gone anywhere since March. So I've been doing a lot of at home stuff. I've been doing a lot of tricks. All my dogs are up there on the trick titles now because I've had time to train. But I have not been to any trials, and I really do miss my peeps, my group.
Right. Yeah. And I've said that too. Like I last year I really didn't do any trialing. I'm similarly, I don't, you know, I've been very cautious during this whole process, and I miss seeing people at agility trials. I'm seriously hoping that, you know, the vaccines and things that they're coming, but very slowly, will allow us someday in the future to be able to gather together again without
by summer or fall of 2021 we can start getting back to a little more normal lives.
Right. That's my hope. I'm really hoping that my sister can, and I, by association, that she can go to the NADAC champs that will be in the fall, and that I can, you know, go with her and watch Belle, because I'm sure that Belle has, the only thing that we have been able to do, my sister was, our local school was doing VT runs, so we would go do that. My dog was in intro in 2019, and I didn't see much point of trying to do intro classes. So I was pretty much always doing the novice VTs, but we were only having limited success this year when we would go to the VT runs. But I was seeing progress, because like on the regular courses, he wasn't weaving, and some of the last ones, and now it's winter here on the East Coast, so we're not, the VT's kind of closed down for us now. Toward the end of the fall there, in the last few runs, he was actually starting, you know, he wouldn't do that weave pull the first time, but if I brought him back around, I was getting him to actually do that short set.
That progress.
So I was really happy with that. Yes, that's what you want to see, is progress. But then eventually, when I do start going back to a trial, who knows? You know, I'm hoping that will translate over. But I may never, I don't know if I'll go back to intro, or I'll try to stay a novice at that point, since there is no requirement to do.
Unfortunately, since I retired Pixie, I had just started doing classes with Onyx when all this COVID mess happened, and I kind of lost my motivation. I think that happened to a lot of people. A lot of people, this whole COVID thing has changed their focus, or given them some difficulties in getting motivated for certain things. And so I kind of lost my motivation for training agility with Onyx, and turned more to my focus on tricks. And so I don't actually have an agility dog right now. So I'm going to have to fix that situation if I want to trial towards the end of this year.
No, I get what you're saying, definitely. And I'm sure that there's a lot of other people similarly, you know, because people who go to agility trials, there's a vast array. You know, you have the diehard people who, you know, they trial as much as they can, and they have, you know, multiple dogs. And then you have the people who I'm a little closer to. You know, I've always enjoyed doing agility, and I have one dog, and, you know, I really enjoy it and I miss it. But, you know, the people like that who's, you know, it's just the family dog and they're doing agility, they may not be doing agility now.
Interestingly, I would have been classified as one of those diehard people who went to every trial. I was the chief course builder for almost every NADAC trial on this side of the mountains in Colorado for several years, and have run up to three dogs at a time. But I don't know what it is about this year that just my motivation kind of tanked for getting Onyx trained. And part of it is she's a sighthound mix, so she's a little bit challenging for agility. Having a beagle, you know how that goes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with nothing to strive for and no classes to go to and all of that, my focus just has not been on agility this year. So I'm hoping to get back to that and have a dog to run again. And because I am kind of a diehard, agility will always be in my blood person, but it just hasn't been the case this year.
Right. Yeah, I get it. Just now, when you were talking there, I just thought of something. So you mentioned going to trials there. Can you name some of the NADAC clubs in the Colorado area that you might, you know, that you've attended in the past?
Sure. So the biggest one that holds the most NADAC trials is Mountain Dog Sports. And Lindsay Cooper, she's a friend of mine, owns that one. And she has over at least six trials a year, maybe more than that. She's up in the Denver area. And so that's one. Front Range Agility team does some NADAC trials, and I'm trying to think if there are any other clubs around that do NADAC. We have a lot of AKC here. Like, you could trial every weekend for AKC, and we have quite a bit of USDAA.
Right.
NADAC is popular. Like, Lindsay's trials in October, she has a Halloween trial, and they are full 3-day trials. So it's still popular, but there aren't as many clubs that do it. So probably Mountain Dog Sports is the primary one. And then there's a club in Grand Junction, which is on the other side of the mountains, that has a few trials, and Front Range Agility Team has trials. And that's pretty much it, though, for Colorado.
Right. Okay. I was just curious to the names that were out there in the Colorado area. It's a little far for me. I don't think I'll make it out there. Maybe, when one, dreams of the future, like being able to travel, and because I enjoy traveling, and traveling and maybe it hitting trials as you trial. That is a thought that is in my mind for the future. Whether it ever happens, you never know. But it would be nice to visit other areas and see trialing
Yep.
and go to trials in different places while
Well,
seeing the
Colorado's
sights
beautiful. It would be a
in
great place to
between.
come trial.
Yes, yeah. I like I said, I've been to your state once, and it definitely I remember it being a quite a beautiful state. New Jersey has a few things that we can appreciate it, but there's nothing like
Yep.
those Rocky Mountains. They are quite the sight. Yeah. All right. Well, I think maybe we're about done. Could you one more time
Sure,
share
it's
your website for the future
www.maximumfundogs.com.
for people?
And then if they want to join my trick program, if they look on Facebook for Maximum Fun, they're called Spark Teams. That's just what the organization calls them. So I have Maximum Fun NTD Spark Team through Expert. And if they search on Facebook for Maximum Fun, they should find it.
Oh, very good. Yeah. And I thank you for being my guest. Is there anything else dog related, rescue, anything
No,
else you want to
I don't think
share
so. Like I
about
said, I'm
dogs?
on rescue number 11, but I'm not anti-breeder. I also have a purebred whippet in the house, so they all do well. It's all about the relationship with our
Right.
dogs, and I really enjoy that aspect of training, just building the communication, and I love the bond that tricks and agility allow us to have with these dogs, and I think it makes them much better companions for us in everyday life.
Right. Well, I totally agree with your sentiment. Dogs make life better. Even though I'm just usually a one dog in my life, but when I lost my beagle Dino, I had a few months there where I had to, but then I wanted to get another dog because it dogs are cool.
Well,
They make
the
life
nice
better.
thing,
That's
I
my
have four,
opinion.
and the nice thing about having multiples is when you do inevitably lose one, which we all know their lives are way too short. But when you do inevitably lose one,
That's right.
there's some comfort in still having a few around.
Right. Yes, I do see that. So if I ever get a little more bigger house, a little more property, I might be one of those people that could have
I've had
multiple
multiple
dogs.
dogs
It's
for,
possible.
oh, probably 18 or 19 years now, so I'm not sure what I would do with just one.
Right. Yeah, it's like, well, at that point, once you go to multiples, it's a pack. It's more than like, your pack is quite
Yep.
it's part of your life. Yeah, so I get it. All right. Well, I definitely thank you, Lori, for reaching out to me. You definitely reached out in a unique way. You were the first person to reach out to me through the Anchor app with the voicemail. And I appreciate that, even though I had to then reach back to you in a weird way, because when people leave me something on the Anchor app in that voicemail, really all I get is the voicemail. So like, I don't get a person's email. The only way I really have to respond if someone questions me or something is to leave
that's
them
kind
a
of funny. I, yeah. And I didn't realize that. I just, you know, I'd heard some of your podcasts and Craig had shared his, and I thought, well, that's kind of a fun thing. I'd like to do that if he needs people to do it. And so if I'd known that you only get the voicemail, I probably would have tried a different method.
It's fine. We have connected, and you have now been a guest, and I really do appreciate that you're my first guest of 2021. And I kind of picked you, I'll say, because you're an ADAC person. I wanted to start kind of with someone similar to like how I've had my guests during 2020, because for the most part, everybody.
I am definitely an ADAC person. That is my first love always.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Well, once again, I thank you very much for being on the podcast, and I look forward to someday maybe meeting you.
That would be great. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. Bye.
All right. Bye. And I'm back with a quick final. I want to thank Lori Reynolds for being my first guest of 2021. I do want to apologize for the audio recording of the podcast with her. I noticed that the audio got a little out of sync about halfway through the podcast. Lori, I guarantee you, Lori was not stepping on me, and she's not psychic, so she wasn't answering my questions before I had finished them. And then I was not taking a second or two to respond to her. So at the very end of the podcast, I noticed we were a little bit out of sync between Lori and me. I don't know why this happens. I think it's when I do the recordings through the Anchor app with people. Sometimes this happens, and I don't know why. So that's why sometimes I'm doing a phone interview with people, because I know then we don't get that out of syncness. Also, after I talked with Lori, she sent me videos of novice tricks and intermediate tricks that are on YouTube. And I put the links to those videos in the show description. So if you'd like to see a short video about novice tricks and intermediate tricks, it's Lori with her dogs doing the tricks. It's a short video with the novice and the intermediate tricks. Which you can find in this podcast's description details. And you can see that if you go to offcourseagility.com, it'll take you to my Anchor home platform where you can see those descriptions and you can find those links. Or you can likely find it in the details if on the podcast through Apple Podcast or wherever you get the podcast from. I want to also say that you can, as always, you can comment to me or give me any feedback by sending an email to me at offcourse@optimum.net. offcourse@optimum.net, which you can also find in the show details. And one final note is that there's been some announced NADAC changes. And the preliminary top 10 of NADAC has been announced. So I think I will release a podcast on Wednesday, February 3rd, a topical one, where I'll talk a little bit about the NADAC changes for 2021 And I'll go over the NADAC top 10 of 2020. And if you're going to a trial, VT, or an actual trial, I wish you happy trialing.